Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is the Soundcheck Podcast.
From the studios of New York Public Radio and live on Facebook, this is the Soundcheck Podcast. I'm John Schaefer. Today we're joined by one of my favorite guitarists, Kaki King. And the reason she's one of my favorite guitarists is not because she's a virtuoso shredder, although she definitely is. It's because she writes so well in so many different styles. She writes, of course, guitar instrumentals, but also songs, and recently, a fair amount of chamber music, like this collaboration you're hearing now with the string quartet called Ethel. Kaki's latest record is called Kaki King Live at Berkeley, and was done with a chamber orchestra. She's got a string quartet in tow with her here today to play some songs from that new record. This first one is called Fences. Thank you. That's called Fences. It's music from Khaki King, the guitarist and composer, in a live performance here in our studio. And let me introduce you to the members of the string quartet helping Khaki out today. Kari Henrik-Jusila playing the cello, Jennifer France playing the viola, and on violins, Kansu Ozurek and Sam Draper. Khaki, of course, playing the guitar. Great to see you again.
Good to
always
see you, John.
Anybody not watching us on Facebook might have thought at the beginning of that song that you were playing not a guitar, but some kind of zither.
Mm-hmm.
Explain that particular instrument.
I love this guitar.
I do too.
This is a high-strung 12-string guitar made by Joe Vayette, who's a luthier in Woodstock, and he is really a master of building strange things that sound incredibly beautiful and play incredibly well. So this is normally tuned D to D, but an octave above where you'd normally have a D on a guitar.
So when you say it's high strung, you don't mean it's full of anxiety, but rather it's actually pitched a lot higher.
And so the string gauges are very, they have to be very light, and I break a lot of strings on this one. But it has this depth to it that's just fascinating. And with this particular tuning, I've tuned a couple of strings, so they're not in unison, but they're a major second apart, so it has these overtones for days.
Right.
I love this guitar, and I really need to write more on it because it's a masterpiece.
The instrument is a masterpiece, you're saying, yeah.
Well, and funny, I'll just say this. When I work with Joe or I work with any luthier, you know, like his input, he helped me write that song you just heard by making this instrument.
Right.
And that's something that I think needs to be more acknowledged in luthery.
So sometimes when you see a guitarist with lots of guitars, which is certainly the case with you, it's because each instrument is different and leads you in different kind of directions.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about this direction of you and the chamber orchestra on the new album, Live at Berklee. This is something you've been kind of building up to for a while.
I've been working with strings for the past 5 or so years, more hands-on in terms of actually writing for strings or recording them, producing them, and touring with them. With Ethel, who you mentioned before, with Alarmal Sound, and with various other players who have just come over and sort of shown me how certain things work. I'm still a novice, but I think I've realized that anyone can do this if you just have a basic amount of information about how a player plays and an instrument works. If you can communicate with that player, they can really help you lay down what you want to do.
Right. And that does make a difference because you're not doing some abstract exercise in orchestration. You're actually in a room with players and kind
Precisely.
Of working stuff out.
Yeah.
So tell me how this project came together.
This was the brainchild of Mr. Tony Brown, who is faculty at Berklee, and he's known me for a while. I first met him, I think, when I was on their radio station up there, just doing a live spot. And, you know, basically, I think it's a brilliant idea. So what we did is we took old music of mine and reimagined it, reorchestrated it. I did some of it. Some student orchestrators worked on some. And then Tom Hagerman from Devotchka did some of the arrangements. This one that you just heard, actually. It's sort of interesting working with old music and thinking, well, you know, is this cool or nice? But when you really re-examine and reimagine songs, especially songs that, to me, some on the record, that never really got, like, the love they deserved the first time around, it's really fun. But then we did it live, and that was what really brought it to life. But, you know, that's what made it interesting. Because just to take older songs and reorchestrate them and then do it perfectly in a studio might not be as cool. But the fact that we, you know, put it together, we had a conductor, we had all student players, student and faculty players, and then, you know, did it live. We had two shots and, you know, pulled it off and made a really beautiful album out of it. There's a palpable excitement that brings these old songs to life.
Right.
And, yeah.
Well, it's often said that, you know, a good song remains a good song even if you strip it down to just like one person and a guitar.
Yeah, it should.
But these songs began as one person and a guitar. And does it work in reverse when you blow up a miniature, so to speak?
You know, it's been interesting. You know, a few people have said, I'm sad I can't hear more guitar. And I think, well, we've already done that.
Yeah.
Like, the idea is that we take something that did start on the guitar and someone else's imagination goes wild with it. A lot of these pieces are very new sounding, especially to my ear, and breathing life into material that, you know, has been written, some of it 10 years ago. So I think I definitely think it can work in reverse. I think plenty of things get reimagined and reorchestrated and remixed. I mean, it's kind of a style of remixing.
Absolutely.
Really.
I mean, you think of Ravel taking Mussorgsky's pictures at an exhibition, turning the piano piece into this like orchestral masterwork.
Yeah.
It certainly can go that way. But now, this is something yet again, because the chamber orchestra at the Berklee College of Music was strings and winds.
Mm-hmm.
Now you've got a string quartet. So you,
right, yeah.
you've had to
Here
scale back down.
As far as making an album, it's still something that you get to go out and promote and get excited about and meet again with the people that you played with 6 months ago to do things live. And so,
and then when you do go on the rest of the tour later this year, will that just be you?
I'm still touring my projection mapping project, The Neck is a Bridge to the Body. That still has not hit every tertiary market in the United States. There's a lot of tiny towns out there.
Right.
So I still tour that, and I have been doing a few solo shows and personally gearing up for like the next very big project. And I'm really grateful to Tony and Berklee because this was something that came at the perfect time because I was still on the road with this very complicated, beautiful, but visual epic projection mapping and guitar project. And then if he had said, oh, I want you to write new music and it's going to be a whole new music with chamber orchestra, I would have never been able to pull it off in the time constraint that I had. So this fell at exactly the right period of life and work to do a project like this.
The album's called Live at Berklee, at the Berklee College of Music, and Khaki King and String Quartet here with us today. So next up is the song Magazine.
Sure.
Which guitar gets pressed into service for this?
I'm going to use this guitar.
And what kind of tuning are we dealing with here?
Oh, gee.
Is that a bad question to ask?
Okay.
Does that
now
require a half?
Now, in my mind, it's C, G, D, G, G, D. Yeah, but
okay.
It's actually all of the tunes on this record
I am
in my
so
head
sorry
start.
I asked this question.
You really should be. They all start in C, but they're either B flat, B, C, and one is C sharp. But essentially, could have made this easy on myself and just told everyone, hey, that song that's in B flat, just write it in C. But no, I made, you know, so I've created a monster. Just don't worry about it.
All right, okay.
But I do have two unison strings, so
yes, you got
if
a couple of G's there,
you,
yeah. Khaki King with the string quartet live here in the studio. Let's hear Magazine. Thank you. That is Khaki King with String Quartet live here in the studio and a version of Magazine, which you will find with a full chamber orchestra on the new album called Khaki King Live at Berkeley. I want to follow up on something you said before when you said, you know, some people have said, wow, I wish I could hear more of the guitar.
Yeah, but most people have said they're very happy.
Yeah. but to that point about wanting to hear more, there is a thing that happens to guitarist composers where they become known as guitarist composers as opposed to just composers of music.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like in writing songs and in writing for strings and stuff, you've attempted to break out of that little box that we like to put guitarists in.
Yeah, well, I mean, my first two records were pretty much solo guitar. And mm-hmm. then I did three records that were wildly different and had a lot going on and, you know, was much more in the post-rock world. So, you know, I became composer and arranger and drummer and, you know, weird sound finder and, you know, all of those things. I actually said after my second record, I just don't have another solo guitar record in me right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I needed to do something different. And I think that helped me realize that if you write well and you try new things and you always try to put out quality work no matter what genre it might be in, that your audience will say, okay, I trust you.
Right.
I trust that whatever you put out is going to be quality. And fortunately, I've earned that trust over the years.
Mm-hmm.
I know that the work that I do is really good, even if it's not the same damn thing every time.
Well, just in that piece, in Magazine, the guitar is also a keyboard through the tapping technique and a percussion instrument.
Sure.
So it's a very versatile tool. It's much more than its six strings might lead you to expect. And of course, you have, over the course of the years, amassed kind of a collection
of
guitars.
I have indeed.
Why?
Well, have I told you what I've done with that collection?
Other cathedrals?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You've told me, but let's...
Well, yeah. So I did not intend to be a guitar collector. You know, I have a signature guitar with Ovation. I have two here. I have several more at home, just a few. They owned Hamer for a while and also Takamine. So I received a few free guitars. And then I found this little Griffin. And then I met the luthier and I bought one of his electric baritone guitars because it sounded amazing. And let's see what else happened. I mean, I started to just have a few nylon string guitars because that was what I was using for a little bit. So the collection grew and grew. And a lot of it was given to me. A lot of it was stuff that I needed. Like, I really just needed Telecaster Deluxe. I can't tell you why I really need one, but I did. At some point, I was just moving cases of guitars from one storage space to another, and it was really depressing. And without meaning to, I had become the very person that I hated, which is a person that collects guitars and puts them in cases and does not touch them. So I needed to relieve myself of this psychic burden. And so I built a guitar studio that is called Other Cathedrals, which is named after the Adrian Legg album, Guitars and Other Cathedrals.
Mm-hmm. Adrian Legg, British
finger-picking and Ovation player, incidentally. The first thing I just wanted to do was just get all the guitars in the same room at the same time. I wanted to keep the collection intact, but I wanted it to be used.
Right.
To that end, I've now basically built a guitar library that is open to the public by appointment only.
Mm-hmm.
The other reason for doing it was that every time people pick up my guitar, like the one that I play the most, the first thing they say is, oh my God, this feels so easy. Like, this feels nothing like my, you know, Yamaha that I haven't changed the strings in three years and has never had a setup, you know, like, and I think there's a lot of reasons that a guitar can feel very easy to play and very responsive versus a guitar that's not. And to educate people about how guitars are made, how they're built, how they function, and why certain guitars, you know, are easier to play than others was really important to me. Now, my father had great guitars. He never had multiples, but he always had one really great one.
Mm.
And my first record was written on a guitar that my father wouldn't let me touch when I was a child because it was a nice guitar. And back in the day, I was like, what a jerk. And now that I have children, I'm like, yeah, I completely understand, Dad. To have grown up always with a nice guitar within reach really made a huge difference in my playing. And like these guys surrounding me are classical musicians, and you don't give someone that's attempting to play classical music a terrible instrument.
Yeah.
Especially even classical guitarists at a young age are given very fine guitars that they will grow into and they will grow with. And that doesn't really tend to happen in other genres of guitar playing. So purpose of the studio is to be there and to be accessible and to be interesting. It's not the most collectible. It's not the most weird. It's just what I find to be the most interesting collection of colors, tones, and ranges of the six string and related fretted things.
And people can record there and instruments are meant to be played.
They are meant to be played, precisely.
And
yeah.
They don't like sitting in a case,
no.
Off in a storage unit somewhere. So that's great. People who are interested, it's othercathedrals.com?
Othercathedrals.com. Currently, it's a bit under construction, but I think by the new year, we'll be kind of rolling again.
Okay. Now, in terms of the other musicians here, I mean, with Kansu and Sam and Jenny and Kari, were all of them in the Berklee?
Yeah.
So
you guys are all part of the ensemble.
Yeah. So this is a scaled down version of that chamber orchestra.
Exactly. Yeah.
Playing for us here today in the studio. Khaki King's latest is called Khaki King Live at Berklee. And obviously she and the quartet here with us in the studio. I love Night After Sidewalk, the original, but I really love what you did with it.
Thank you. This is my arrangement.
Really? Very nice.
Thank you.
So this is now your scaled-down arrangement as well for just the strings?
I wrote it. The ensemble was just basically doubled string quartet.
Oh, okay.
So while I may have done it a little bit differently if it was just a quartet, this is pretty accurate to what I wanted.
Now, this is an interesting thing here. There are lots of theorists over the years, music theorists, who say that a double string quartet is just wrong.
Really?
That when you have two instruments playing the same line, you need that third to get
right. Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's why
if you do
overdubs, the violinist always does three to make it. Yeah. Okay.
I mean, I'm not buying it, but I've been, I've heard this from string players over the years and from arrangers.
Yeah.
You either do one or you do three.
It's like flowers. You always have an odd number.
Is that right?
In Japanese flower arranging, it's like a big deal. You always have an odd number of flowers.
Huh.
Yeah.
All right.
Strings, flowers, or...
That's the thing I learned today. So these are single strings.
Well, this is how it should be, I guess.
Right. Night After Sidewalk is the name of the piece by Khaki King. Here's another live performance in our Soundcheck studio.
Thank you.
That is called Night After Sidewalk. It is a lovely but melancholy piece from Khaki King. That one goes back a few years too, doesn't it?
I wrote that in an NYU dorm not too far from here when I was 20 years old.
Wow.
18 years old. Do you want to know the story?
Yeah.
Sidewalk Cafe would do an open mic night, and this was, I think, the first open mic night I may have ever gone to. But usually, if you could play at all, you could get a gig at the Sidewalk Cafe, as long as you weren't playing covers. I went with a friend, and I was really nervous, and she was really nervous, and I was, you know, in college, and I was a reluctant guitar player. I played bass and drums in everyone else's band, but as a guitarist, I was like, I don't really know if I want to do this. So we go, and we play the open mic, and, you know, I get up, and of course, it's like the very end of the evening. It's, you know, 1 a.m., and I get up, and I do my thing, and I shred, and I think I'm, you know, like, yeah, I played great, and I don't get a gig. And the guy who did it would just, like, say, okay, like, you know, on the mic in front of everyone, like, hey, do you want to play Tuesday at 6:30? And you'd be like, hooray!
Yeah.
And, like, he just was like, thank you. And so I left the stage.
Wow.
And my friend, who was not as good as me, did get a gig. So we take a cab back home, and I go up into my dorm room at NYU, and I decide that I'm never playing music again, but before I stop, I'm going to write a song. And I wrote this song in that night, all at once. And even though the tapping and the exciting guitar stuff gets a lot of play, Night After Sidewalk was my number one downloaded song on iTunes for like 10 years.
Yeah.
So like, I feel very justified in my anger over that experience.
Well, but fortunately you got over it, and it turned out not to be your farewell to music.
I mean, I got over it the next day. It was just this thing of like, really? Come on.
Yeah.
And no, I kept going, obviously, but it was a very wonderful impetus to write a pretty melancholy song about failure.
Now, do any of these pieces exist as, you know, I mean, if you were writing on a nylon string classical guitar, we would expect notated scores that other guitarists could pick up. And does that happen with any of your stuff?
No. I think there's always this intention that I will one day create a book. And something like Night After Sidewalk would be relatively easy. Something like Magazine would be very complex.
Yes.
So I would definitely need a transcriptionist and, you know, someone that does this really professionally to sit down with me. And there have been a few pieces that have been transcribed for guitar magazines, and they always get them totally wrong, even though they're doing a great job. But like, you know, I literally have to be there saying it's actually a hammer-on with the left hand and the right hand's doing something else, as opposed to there's a pluck, you know.
Yeah.
It gets down to the finger, to both hands are doing such different things. So, but that's always like the rumor is I'm going to make the book happen and some lessons out of that, and one day.
One day. All right. So you'll float that rumor a little while longer.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
We'll see what happens. Khaki King's latest album is called Live at Berklee. It's a great record, and I'm so glad you were able to come in and play
Thank
for
you.
Us.
Thank you so much for having us, John. It's good to see you.
This is Soundcheck. That'll do it for this edition of the Soundcheck podcast. We shot video today for Facebook Live. My thanks to Kim Nowacki, our videographer. Our technical director is Irene Trudell, and we had production assistance, as usual, from Karen Havlick. I'm John Schaefer. See you next time.